December 7, 2012, Mayapur, India, Nectar Devotion, class number 8.
So our basic eligibility is attraction and taste, right? By the way, you guys have great questions. Attraction and taste. Now we said that basically you can't be too attached or too detached. Although Prabhupada said even if you're very attached, if you have attraction and taste, that's enough. Now what is not considered? And you may be surprised. You will be surprised. Some of you are surprised. And you're asking me, huh? How is this? What is not considered? Let's look at Nectar of Devotion, page 26. My dear Uddhava, all persons are engaged in activities, whether those indicated in the revealed scriptures or ordinary worldly activities. If by the result of either of such activities they worship me in Krishna consciousness, then automatically they become very happy within this world as well as in the next. So you don't have to be miserable in this world to be a devotee. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Of this there is no doubt. We can conclude from this statement by Krishna that activities in Krishna consciousness will give everyone all perfection and all desires. Thus, the Krishna consciousness movement is so nice that there is no need of even designating oneself Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. Let everyone be engaged in whatever occupation he now has. Simply let him worship Lord Krishna by the result of his activities in Krishna consciousness. That will adjust the whole situation and everyone will be happy and peaceful within this world. So what do you not need? You do not need to have the material side of your life together. For many of you, that will be a very big relief. For those of you who have the material side of your life together, that may be a big disappointment because maybe you're really proud of it. And maybe you thought, I have the material side of my life together. And that gives me an additional qualification to be a devotee. Nope. Sorry. Does not. Of course, if the material side of your life together, it's nice, makes your life easier. Undoubtedly, makes both your material and spiritual life easier. We will not dispute that, but it's not a qualification. It's not a qualification. You do not need to have your material life. If you think you have to have the material side of your life together in order to be eligible for Krishna consciousness, what part of the definition of bhakti does that violate?
Karma
anavritam. If anyone tells you, no, when someone tells you, not if, when someone tells you, and they will tell you, that you must have the material side of your life together in order to be eligible for bhakti, just smile and say thank you and go on with your life. That's karma-covered bhakti. That's karma-covered bhakti. Now, having the material side of your life together is highly recommended if you can do it. You don't say intentionally mess up the material side of your life. That would be really foolish. If you can be a Pakka Brahmana or a Pakka Kshatriya or Vaishya or Shudra, if you can be a Pakka Brahmacharini, Grahastha, Vanaprasthi, there's no harm, as long as you don't take that as a new body that you become attached to, in which case you're ruining everything. So if you start thinking, I am a Brahmana, Brahmachari, you've really messed yourself up. But any upadhi, if you think, I'm a not care about Varnashrama person, then you're messing yourself up too. Don't get into a new upadhi. I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm a servant of Krishna's devotees. I'm a servant of Krishna. And I will accept whatever is favorable for my service to Krishna. And generally, getting your material life together is favorable for your service to Krishna, but it's not necessary. It's not necessary. It's not necessary. It's just like having good health is favorable. You know, but if you don't have good health, it's not that you can't be a devotee. It doesn't mean you should intentionally ruin your health. Well, I don't need good health to be a devotee. Let me jump off the roof. You know, that's pretty foolish. You make some endeavor to have good health. You make some endeavor to have a sane life. But if you can't have a sane life, it doesn't matter. You know, plan A is you have a sane life. That's plan A. You know, your parents protected you. You're a nice virgin girl. You got married before you were 20 to a first-class Vaishnava man. You know, you had your children when you were somewhere between 18 and 30. You know what your varna is. Your husband has the same varna, and you and your husband work together in your occupation in Krishna's service. Your children you all raise as really nice devotees. And your children are all grown up by the time your husband's 50. And then you give up your occupation, and you both travel to the holy places, or you preach together. If you can do that, then please do it. You know, we're not saying intentionally don't do that. We're not saying intentionally marry a demon. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying, it doesn't matter. If somehow or other, you know, you lost your virginity when you were 12 with 50 people by the time you were 25, you can still be a pure devotee. You know, if your husband leaves you and runs off with 50 other women, you can still be a pure devotee. If you don't have any children, if you have 100 children, if you have 2 children, you can still be a pure devotee. You can still practice pure devotional service. You don't need to have the material side of your life together. First of all, is that under our control, my dear friends? No, it's not. No. I don't know very many people whose lives work out exactly according to their order. I want this in my life, and I want this in my life, and I want this in my life, and I want this in my life, you know? Yes?
I was wondering, that's the philosophy, but why does our institution then not reflect the philosophy?
Why does what not reflect this philosophy?
Why does our institution not reflect the philosophy?
I am not answering that question. I'm sorry. I could answer that question. Maybe I will answer that question. I'm a fool's rush in where angels fear to tread kind of person. Because our institution exists on many levels. Actually, if you're really interested, I wrote an article on this called What is ISKCON and What is a Member of ISKCON? It was published on ISKCON.com and on Dandavats.com, and you can read it. Just very briefly, just like this human body. This human body exists on many levels. So everyone here, I assume, passed stool, right? We all do that? Yes. But that's not how we deal with each other. We don't see another human and think, oh, another stool-passing creature. So an institution also passes stool. It's a body. It exists on many levels. You can think of a human body as something that's full of stool and urine and mucus and blood and pus, and you can think of a human body as a vehicle to go back to home, back to Godhead. You can think of a human body as a vehicle for sense gratification. You can think of a human body as, you know, so many things. So ISKCON exists on several levels. So one level that exists, and you can think this according to the modes of nature and transcendence. So on the transcendental level, ISKCON exists as part of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And you can be in ISKCON and be experiencing yourself as participating in the eternal lila of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Another transcendental way of seeing yourself in ISKCON is seeing yourself as part of Mahaprabhu's mission, which is also part of his lila, of course. That ISKCON is part of Mahaprabhu's mission. So Mahaprabhu's internal or external lila. Those are two transcendental visions. Then mode of goodness vision. And there's many, many quotes from Srila Prabhupada that says that this is what ISKCON is, by the way. Mode of goodness vision. ISKCON is a means for my personal purification and my personal liberation, my personal salvation. That's sattva guna.
And Prabhupada would sometimes define, the purpose of ISKCON is for our own personal liberation and salvation. But that is sattva. Then in Rajaguna, the mode of passion. By the way, the mode of passion is very much misunderstood. The mode of passion is, I want to be happy in this world by pious activities. Mode of ignorance is, I want to be happy in this world by sinful activities. So mode of passion is dharma, ordinary dharma. Mode of goodness is moksha. Mode of passion is ordinary dharma. So the mode of passion, ISKCON exists to establish varnashram. ISKCON exists to establish dharma. ISKCON exists to establish truthfulness and piety and chastity. And there are quotes from Prabhupada that will say the purpose of ISKCON is to establish varnashram. That's Rajagun. Then Tamagun, there are quotes from Prabhupada that said, don't use ISKCON for this. But there are plenty of people who do. ISKCON is a place for me to get a place to eat, a place to sleep, a place to make money. One of the quotes we had for today's class, Prabhupada saying, everyone comes to Vrindavan, he said, just for spiritual life. No one comes to Vrindavan to make money. Of course, that was in 72. I don't think Prabhupada would say that today, in 2012. And he said, if you do come to Vrindavan to make money, that is an offense. But still, he said, coming to Vrindavan will eventually purify you. So if you come to ISKCON to make money, to get power, to get status, power, money, under the cover of a religious organization, that's the mode of ignorance. It's an aparad, actually. But there are people who do that. Yes? I'm sure you'll meet some of them. Hopefully none of you are in that category. None of us are in that category. So you can see ISKCON as a vehicle for money and status and power and exploitation. You can see ISKCON as a vehicle for mundane dharma. You can see ISKCON as a vehicle for personal salvation and personal purification. Or you can see ISKCON as part of the Leela of Mahaprabhu, internal or external. And ISKCON actually exists on all of those levels depending on your consciousness. If you are interested in money and status and power, you will think everyone else in the movement is interested in money and status and power. And if you are interested in personal purification, you will think that everyone else is too, by the way. And if you're interested in mundane dharma and varnashram, you will think everyone else is or should be. So that's your own consciousness. Now, ISKCON does exist to establish mundane dharma in the world. Why? Because the world is full of adharma. And although Krishna consciousness is possible from the platform of adharma, it's more difficult. Just like, why did someone build this building? Could we have the class outside? Sure. Why don't we? It's not as easy. It's more distracting. More difficult. So somebody went to a lot of trouble to build the building and maintain the building. And that's part of the reason you have to pay for the course. You have to pay to rent the building. Why do you have to pay to rent the room? Because somebody has to clean it and someone has to pay the electric bill. And I think they paint the walls once a year. So that's like mundane dharma. Do you need a classroom to study the nectar devotion? No. Does it help?
Yes.
Yeah. Is it necessary? No. Varnashram is material. Completely. 100% material. It has to do with the body and the mind. It's nothing to do with the soul. If you can follow Varnashram, it's helpful. But it's not necessary. And if you think it's necessary, then what are you doing to bhakti? You're covering it with karma. It becomes karma-covered bhakti. And then you're not in pure bhakti anymore, my dear friends. You're in something else. And you're not flying directly to Vrindavan. You're flying to Thailand first. You know? And I was on the plane for so long, the prasadam I had with me got rotten. You know, you'll really delay your process if you try to do karma-covered bhakti. Please don't do it. And if someone tells you to do karma-covered bhakti, just smile and say yes, yes, and go on with your own business. I mean, if you can convince them, fine, but generally that doesn't work in my experience. Now, if you think personal purification, separate from bhakti, is necessary for bhakti, that's jnana-covered bhakti. That's mode of goodness. But it's still covered. It's still not pure bhakti. If If you think I have to purify myself separate from bhakti, separate from being attracted to Krishna, I have to purify myself by some practice other than being attracted to Krishna, that's gyan covered bhakti.
Would you say that when people go to
it depends on their mood. She said, is that like when people read a self-help book? It depends on your mood. Jnana and karma are not forbidden. Material motives are forbidden. Jnana and karma are not forbidden. It's not jnana karma shunya. It's jnana karma anavritam, adi anavritam. Don't cover your bhakti with jnana or karma. You can be pious. We're not saying you have to be sinful. That'd be pretty fun. You know, you can be pious. And you can be interested in purification. But if you think they're necessary for your bhakti, you're covering your bhakti with those things and you're actually impeding your progress instead of helping it. Now, if you intentionally do something sinful, you're also impeding your progress. If you say, well, I'm going to leave my husband and run off with that brahmachari because he's more spiritual and piety doesn't matter, that's also impeding your progress. Does that make sense? That's also making your bhakti harder. If you have a nice classroom, why sit in the construction zone? That's really dumb. No, that's really, really dumb. If you're already born, I know some devotees like this, if you're already born a natural yogi, and you already are just born naturally able to control your kundalini and purify all your chakras, don't throw it away. But don't think that's necessary for bhakti. You have it, why not use it? If you have a nice pious birth and you had good protective parents and you have a nice pious marriage and a wonderful husband and wonderful children, don't throw that away and run after some other man because piety doesn't matter. I mean, what a foolish thing to do is that? If you have a nice classroom, we don't say, let's go sit where they're building the new temple and have our class there. Why don't we have our class in the temple room where the kirtan's going on and all the visitors are coming through? If you have a classroom, then use it. But if you think, without this classroom, we can't study nectar devotion, that's also foolish. So this, yes?
It's more difficult, isn't it? To practice back under difficult conditions.
Of course.
For example, I've heard
yes, of course.
Times for a woman to be in Krishna consciousness that for her it's so favorable to have children, it's almost impossible to attain highest level.
No. See, there's. Do you hear this? Do you hear how it shifts?
Yeah.
Do you hear how it just shifts a little bit? You can become Krishna conscious whether you have children or not. Now, if you choose not to have children because they are a lot of trouble, that's renunciation in the mode of passion. You will not get the result of your renunciation and you'll make your life more difficult. If you say, I'm not going to have children because they're so much trouble and they'll interfere with, they'll interfere with my service, I won't be able to do my service because my children will be asking things. That's renunciation in the mode of passion. That's not going to help you. It'll actually harm your Krishna consciousness. But you can be Krishna conscious whether you have children or not, for goodness sakes. There's if as soon as you say any, and we're talking about jnana covered bhakti, we'll discuss this more later. Jnana covered bhakti is more, I need a separate process of purification in order to become Krishna conscious. Krishna consciousness alone will not purify. The difference is subtle, isn't it? Because you can use jnana and karma in Krishna service. And if you have, if you have knowledge and piety, you should use it in Krishna service. Shouldn't reject it. That's false renunciation. But if you think it's necessary for your Krishna, if anyone tells you, And the people will tell you, not if, when. When people tell you, you know, unless you're married at 16 to a first-class man and have 10 children and stay with him your whole life and do nothing but cook and clean and scrub the pots, you can't become a devotee. Just smile. Say thank you. And walk away, please. You could argue with him if you choose, but let me know how that goes. Okay? Or if someone says, you can't become attracted, this is gyan-covered bhakti, you can't become attracted to Krishna until you're already self-realized. You can't think of Krishna until you're self-realized. You're thinking of Krishna before you're self-realized? How dare you? That's gyan-covered bhakti. Gyan-covered bhakti says, first, you have to become purified by something other than bhakti, and then you can do bhakti. Karma-covered bhakti says you have to become purified by something other than bhakti in order to do bhakti. Karma-covered bhakti is I have to become purified by being a pious person. Gyan-covered bhakti is I have to become purified by philosophy or by other some other kind of yoga. Then I can think of Krishna. So, pure bhakti, sadhana-bhakti, we just read the definition of sadhana-bhakti, okay? Sadhana bhakti, the essence of sadhana bhakti is, who remembers? Anybody who actually read the chapter. What is the essence of sadhana bhakti? The main rule, that all other rules are the servants of. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. If you think, I cannot always remember Krishna and never forget him until I'm at bhava bhakti, what are you doing? Jnana covered bhakti. That's jnana covered bhakti. If anyone says to you, you're thinking of Krishna all the time? And they will say that to you. Somebody will say that to you. I will give you I'll sign a guaranteed letter that you will meet somebody, maybe more than one somebody, who will say, you're thinking of Krishna while you're chanting Hare Krishna? You're not advanced enough to do that. Have you heard that?
Yes.
So we have to add something to nectar devotion. Always remember Krishna except during japa. When you're chanting Krishna's name, please forget Krishna. And if he comes to your mind, tell him to go away. If you chant in the temple room with the curtains open, close your eyes. Okay? What they're doing is gyan-covered bhakti. That's what they're doing. They're saying, first you have to become purified through some other process, and then you can think of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami are defining what as always thinking of Krishna? What part of bhakti? Sadhana bhakti. They're not defining prema bhakti like that. Let's see again here. Okay, page 21. Middle of the page. Narada Muni mentions this sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti. Does he say prema bhakti? Does he say prema bhakti? Does he say bhava bhakti? Does he say a very advanced stage of bhakti? He says sadhana bhakti. My dear king, what has to?
Fix his mind on Krishna.
It is the duty of the Acharya, the spiritual master, to find the ways and means for his disciple to fix his mind on Krishna. That is the?
Beginning.
That is the what?
Beginning.
The what part?
The beginning.
Oh, it's the beginning of sadhana bhakti. How interesting. Are you understanding now why it takes people sometimes a very long time to make any progress in Krishna consciousness?
Yeah.
Why?
Because
they get told all this other stuff.
What are they doing?
Are
they practicing pure bhakti?
No.
That's why I said if you can just remember that one verse, I'll be happy. If you're not practicing pure bhakti, it's going to take you a long time to come to the goal. Won't it? Yes.
Are there
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. The beginning of pure bhakti is doing what? Beginning of sadhana bhakti is?
Fixing
your mind on Krishna. Therefore, the qualification is to be interested to think of Krishna. Logical. If the process is to think about Krishna, the qualification is to want to think about Krishna. Pretty simple. That simple? The qualification isn't, have you had five husbands? That's not the qualification. I mean, please don't have five husbands if you can avoid it. But that's not the qualification. I mean, it's true. Look, life is harder if your material life is a mess. I agree. But that's not the qualification. And you don't have to first become purified and then you can fix your mind on Krishna. You can fix your mind on Krishna at the beginning. At least you try to. You may not succeed all the time, but that's the process. That is what sadhana bhakti is. We're going to be going next week through all the angas of bhakti, all the shilanams, all the anushilanams. And we'll talk about watering tulsi and observing ekadasi, etc., etc., etc. But all of those things are meant to get you to fix your mind on Krishna. So it may be helpful if you want your child to walk to have something they can hold on to. Maybe you can hold their hands. You know, even if you don't do that, they can learn how to walk. Poor children out in the middle of nowhere with no plastic walker toys learn how to walk. So the purpose is to always think of Krishna, to always think of Krishna and never forget him, to always think of Krishna and never forget him. And everything else, if that's all you do, you'll automatically do everything else right. Isn't that cool? If you actually always remembered Krishna, you'd automatically be following everything else in bhakti. And the whole purpose of whatever else we do in bhakti is to help us always remember Krishna. The practice of bhakti is to always remember Krishna. That's it. And if you want to think of Krishna, you're qualified to start. You don't need to do something else to become qualified to start. Now, in sadhana bhakti, there's two divisions of sadhana bhakti, of bhakti in practice. This is, again, we haven't performed yet. We're practicing to perform. Two divisions. One is called Vaidhi, and one is called Raganuga. Now, Raganuga Bhakti, we're going to discuss in depth later. So please save your questions about Raganuga Bhakti for later. It's just mentioned briefly now by Rupa Goswami and by Srila Prabhupada. It will be discussed later on the seventh day. So briefly, the difference between Vaidhi and Raganuga is what's pushing you. What's pushing you to want to think of Krishna? What's pushing you to do all the things that are going to help you think of Krishna? So in Vaidhi Bhakti, what's pushing you is mostly your willpower, your determination, your conviction. And in Raganuga Bhakti, what's pushing you mostly is your heart, frankly.
Is it possible to have a little bit of something from the heart as well?
Oh, what a wonderful question. Yes, the higher stages of bhakti exist to some extent even at the very beginning. So there's some little bit of prema there even at the very beginning, even from day one. Yes. Just like sometimes a four-year-old may act like an adult for 5 minutes. And sometimes, you know, a 40-year-old acts like a child for a while. So there may be some aspects, yes, but overall, we categorize as Vaidhi and Raganuga, and as I say, we'll talk more about Raganuga later, as what's your overall motivation? What's pushing you? Yes?
What is the actual meaning of Vaidhi?
Vidya means knowledge. Vaidya is like one who has knowledge. So it's based on knowledge, mostly based on knowledge from the scriptures, from guru scriptures, mostly scriptures. You know, Raganuga, it's like, I love Krishna. Oh my God, I just love Krishna. Wow. There's Krishna. Wow, I just want Krishna. And Vaidhi Bhakti is, you know, if you would just be attracted to Krishna, you would get everything you want. Like, oh, that sounds good.
I'd like to do that. In Vaidhi Bhakti, Krishna is mostly an idea. It's a concept. You know, you accept that he's a person, but you don't really know him. Someone asked, how do we get attached to Krishna if we don't know him? That's Vaidhi Bhakti. You don't really know Krishna. You've heard about Krishna. You can repeat the stories about Krishna. Maybe you can even repeat them with some storytelling flair. You know, but you don't really feel that you know Krishna. I was once taking prasadam with a group of people, all of whom had been born in the Hare Krishna movement, second and third generation. I was the only convert, shall we say, in the room. And they were talking, because I've spent a large portion of my Hare Krishna life teaching the children of Hare Krishna devotees. So they were talking about Krishna the way we would talk about a neighbor or a family member. Took me a little while to figure that out. Like, wow, they're talking about Krishna like they know him. And I thought it may take 15, 20 years of practice for someone to do that, and they were doing that naturally. Some of the kids were playing hide and seek in our house, and one little 3-year-old went up to the altar and said, "Gonitai, Gonitai, tell me where Mukunda's hiding." So Vaidhi Bhakti, you don't really know Krishna. You don't really have a natural, you're not being pushed by a strong natural. Now, you may feel occasionally, but it's not what's primarily pushing you. What's primarily pushing you is, this is what it says in the Shastra, this is what Guru has said, and it's my faith in saintly persons and my faith in the Shastra that is what's motivating me. You can think of it like if you're sick, and someone gives you some medicine, and you take the medicine because you trust their authority. And until the medicine really starts making you well, you're taking it out of trust and authority. Like, I have a good friend in Vrindavan, I met her in Vrindavan, and she said, "Ormila, if you use this technique, it'll really help your health." So she gave me a video to watch, and she gave me a program to do. So I've been doing it now for a month, and it hasn't had any effect yet. But she said, just you have to keep doing it. She said, you may have to do it for a year before you see any effect. So because I trust her, and I trust the sources, I'm going to try it for a year. That's Vaidhi Bhakti. Now, when I actually start getting better, then I'll be doing it with another motive. So you take the medicine, you get well, then your reason for taking the medicine stops being the authority of the doctor. Doesn't it? Starts being just your own experience. Now, you might have some experience, even, you have faith in the doctor for some reason. There's some experience even in Vaidhi Bhakti, but it's not it's not what's primarily pushing you. Yes?
What if someone is not determined enough? Like you said, it's the determination and the willpower that drives us to do the...
Then we'll be slower.
So are there means of enhancing our determination or something that is recommended in the scriptures?
It's interesting. Are there means of enhancing our determination? When Prabhupada was asked that question, and you're going to laugh, when devotees said, how do we become more determined? He said, by austerities. And just recently, I've been reading scientific research that supports that concept. That determination and willpower is like a muscle. That the more you use it, the stronger it gets. Now, if you try to do too much, too fast, you'll damage yourself. So if you say, okay, tomorrow, starting from tomorrow, I'm going to chant 150 rounds a day and only eat plain rice and, et cetera, et cetera, then you'll just fall on your face.
For a little while.
Yeah. So you build up your determination gradually and sanely, but determination can be increased by practice. Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a nice system in Bhakti Loka where he says you take a vow for 3 days, and then you take a vow for 2 weeks, and then 3 months. And then you retake it. Now, I've adjusted that a little, so I've done like three days, a week, 2 weeks, a month, 3 months.
But you can take a vow, whatever it might be. You know, I'm not going to eat sweets for 3 days. I'm not going to criticize anyone for 3 days. Whatever. Whatever it is that you're having trouble with. You know, I'm going to get all my rounds done before I turn on my computer for 3 days. Or, I don't know, whatever it is. Whatever you're dealing with. And try it for 3 days and then look at it and say, how do I feel about this? Do I like it? Am I happy with it? How did I do? Was it too much? Was I going crazy? Was all I was thinking about was my vow and I forgot about Krishna? Forget it. I'm not ready for it. Try it again a while later. Because the point is to remember Krishna. Was it fairly easy? Was it fun? Did I like it? Okay, take a vow for another week. At the end of the week, evaluate it. How did I do? Did I keep it 100%, 90%? 70%? Did I just think about my vow and forget about Krishna? Did it help me remember Krishna? And then if you like it, take it for 2 weeks. And then it's same thing at the end of 3 months. And it may be something that then you do for the rest of your life, and it may be something after a while you just don't need to do anymore because the issue is sort of resolved and you don't really need a vow for it anymore. But doing little things like that will definitely help your determination in general. That's one thing. Prabhupada says that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that. And modern psychology says it, so you can't lose.
Okay.
Other things, of course, that will help your determination is associating with people who are happy and determined in Krishna consciousness, not miserable and determined in Krishna consciousness. And we'll discuss that in another time. But not,
yes, I'm a very strict devotee.
That will not help you. Please just say Hari Bodh to such people and stay on the other side of the room. People who are happy and determined, who are happy in their determination and determined because they're happy and they have a taste and they're enjoying Krishna consciousness, they're relishing Krishna consciousness. Hang out with such people, have at least a few friends like that, talk to them, think about them. You know, if you feel not determined, if something's coming up in your life and think, well, what about so-and-so? You know, they're happy. Another is hearing, and more hearing, and then some more. When you're finished, you can hear some more. And you can listen to audiobooks, you can listen to lectures, you can read books, you can go to Shastra classes and hear. And after a while, you'll say, I want that. And I want that enough that I'm willing to work for it. Then also having a general lifestyle in sattva gun will help you to have sattva gun determination. Therefore, no illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, gambling, etc., etc., etc. Watch what you eat, watch what you think about, look at your lifestyle in terms of the modes of nature. Don't go around insulting people, don't offend people, that'll kill your determination. And actually, not always. Sometimes you can be really determined to insult people. But if you want to be determined to Krishna consciousness, please don't insult and offend people. That messes up things very quickly. And if it might be an offense, just don't do it. If you think, this, if there's a little voice that goes, this might be an offense, then just don't do it. Okay? All right? Is that good? Yes?
How can we be careful with Vaidhi and Raghunuga in the sense that sometimes even with like personal deities, we might feel some feelings like, oh, my Guru Krishna is that, but...
Terrible, huh?
But we're not really following...
She's attracted to Krishna.
No, I'm saying if we're not really...
My dear, we'll
like,
talk about this more later, but if you're attracted to Krishna, that's wonderful. Beginning, middle, end. Don't ever... push away, deny, suppress attraction to Krishna. That's the whole point. Don't ever think, I'm not advanced enough to be attracted to Krishna. What is that?
Jnana-covered
bhakti. If you ever think, I have to be advanced before I can be attracted to Krishna, if you're naturally attracted to Krishna, go buy yourself some cheesecake and celebrate. That's the whole point. That's what we're here for. If you feel some attraction and love for Krishna, even if you're a rascal, that's the whole point. That's what will purify you. We'll talk later about Raghunuga. I don't want to get into that too much right now. Right now, I just want to get what the qualifications of Raghunuga Bhakti we will discuss. There's a difference also between occasionally feeling some wonderful attraction to Krishna and practicing Raghunuga Bhakti is what you're doing all the time. But I hope in Vaidhi Bhakti we feel some attraction to Krishna from time to time. I hope so. Yeah. If you don't, you're doing something wrong. That's the whole point. But whether it's Vaidhi or Raghunuga is mostly what's driving you. What is driving you? Why are you doing what you're doing? Are you doing what you're doing because you have faith in Shastra and Guru? Or are you doing what you're doing because you have fallen in love with Krishna? Now, you're allowed to start falling in love with Krishna during Vaidhi Bhakti. That's what's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
That's the whole purpose of Vaidhi Bhakti. So if you notice yourself starting to fall in love with Krishna during Vaidhi Bhakti, please celebrate. You don't have to tell everybody. But please be happy. If you feel any attraction for Krishna any time in any way whatsoever, that's the whole point. Then it's working. Then you're doing something right. Isn't that nice? Yes?
What happens if you're not really attracted to Krishna because you don't really know him, but you really love him because then you will totally die for
that? Oh.
What happens if you really love it? As long as you're loving the devotees in relationship to Krishna, and you're not loving the devotees thinking the devotees are going to meet your needs independent of Krishna, then it's the same thing. So if you love a devotee in relation to Krishna, and if your love for a devotee is not trying to get something from that devotee, and you're not thinking that devotee will meet my needs. The only way that devotee will meet your needs is by connecting with Krishna, who will meet your needs. Then it's exactly the same thing. Just like Prabhupada told my father said, I'm coming to the temple because I love my daughter and son-in-law, not because I love Krishna. And Prabhupada said, they are loving Krishna and you are loving them, so two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. All right. So most important thing is there's two parts of sadhana bhakti. One is Vaidhi and one is Raghunuga. One is Vaidhi, one is Raghunuga. Please remember those terms. One is Vaidhi, one is Raghunuga. Raga means attachment. Vaidhi means knowledge. So one is on the basis of knowledge, one is on the basis of attachment. I'm taking this medicine because I did some study and the study says that it will heal me. And the other is I'm taking this medicine because it makes me feel so good. Can you understand that difference? Raghunuga is, I don't care what the studies say. I feel great. I'm going to keep doing it. But this Shastra says Shiva is supreme. I don't care. I love Krishna. That's Raghunuga Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti is, I'm doing this because this is what it says to do. And I do experience some good effects from it also. But the main reason I'm doing it is because this is what I've been told to do. Is that pretty clear? Okay? Vaidhi is mostly here, and Raghunuga is mostly here.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, there's something here. I have faith in the authority. What's going on here is that I have some faith in the authorities. I have faith in the doctor. I have faith in the medical study. But I don't have, like, I'm not attached to it. You know, if someone says, I just can't live without my spinach soup. It gives me so much energy. That's rugged. If someone says, I like spinach soup. Yeah, sometimes it's really good. But I take it because my doctor said I have to take spinach soup every day. And if the doctor said you don't have to take spinach soup every day, you might stop. So if it's 7:30 and you still have 3 rounds to chant, are you chanting your rounds because you took a vow to chant 16 rounds? Or are you chanting your rounds because you can't stay away from Krishna's name? Pretty simple. Okay? Now, we hope you have glimpses of raga in Vaidhi Bhakti. I hope you do. I hope you have glimpses of raga from second one. Wasn't that the qualification for beginning sadhana bhakti, that you have some taste? that you have some attraction. So you have some, there has to be some, that is the qualification, that you have some attraction. If you say, I have no attraction, I mean, on the higher levels, they're saying that in ecstasy, I have no attraction. That's something else. Anuraga, I have no attraction, Mahaprabhu says. I have no raga. That's an ecstatic feeling of humility. It's actually, on the beginning level, it's helpful to see where you do have attraction, frankly. Otherwise, you get discouraged. So, of course, we wouldn't be here if we had no attraction. You just, at least if Rupa Goswami is telling us the truth. The reason we're all in this room is we have some attraction. So nurture that. And eventually, you nurture that, it will turn into Raghunuga Bhakti. But still, that may not be the main reason. At 7:30 at night, you look at your V-bag and, oh my God, I still have 3 rounds to chant. Oh, okay. I took a vow. I guess I got to finish it. That's Vaidhi Bhakti, folks. Okay? That's Vaidhi Bhakti. Oh, Prabhupada says I have to read his books. Okay, I guess I better do it. That's Vaidhi Bhakti. Now, what's the qualification for beginning Vaidhi Bhakti? From now until day 7, we're not talking about Raghunuga Bhakti, okay? All right? Raghunuga Bhakti is now off of the table until day 7. I think it's day 7. Let me make sure I'm giving you correct information here. Yes. We will get back to Raghunuga Bhakti, and we can all swim in the nectar of Raghunuga Bhakti in day 7. Now we're going to Vaidhi Bhakti. Why? Because we started Vaidhi Bhakti. If you started Raghunuga Bhakti, then you're either a very special case or you finished your Vaidhi in another life. Happens sometimes, but it's unusual. So starting in Vaidhi Bhakti, we talked about general eligibility as an attraction of taste. That's our general eligibility. But there are also 3 levels of eligibility. 3 levels of eligibility. It's something like in this class, or we could say the Bhakti Shastri class I just taught in Vrindavan and Nectar Devotion. It was a very interesting class. I had, in that class, one brahmachari, Indian body, sat right in the front, and the whole class, he was like this. Whole class. Just like a little sun there in that front row. And he knew, I'll say it right now, he knew the Nectar Devotion better than I do. He had studied all the commentaries and he knew everything in Sanskrit, and there was one time I said, can you come up and teach this point? And about 3 or 4 times he corrected me. So he was taking the class because he was required to take sannyas. So he's just about to take sannyas, but he didn't have his Bhakti Shastri degree, so we had to get his Bhakti Shastri degree. And frankly, he could have easily taught the whole class and I would have learned something. At the end, he gave me a wonderful compliment. He said, you taught exactly according to the commentary of Jiva Goswami. Oh. But of course, you have to know the commentary of Jiva Goswami to be able to say that. So I had that student, and then I had another student where I said, so the example Rupa Goswami gives is of a jambil, and she said, who's a jambil?
Oh, no.
So I had that range of qualification in the class, okay? That was my range, but everybody was in the same class. And I'm sure here we also have a range, correct? Some of you have been chanting Hare Krishna for a few months, some of you have been chanting Hare Krishna for 30, 40 years. So there's a big difference. And when people start Vaidhi Bhakti, they also start at different places. Now, anyone who has an attraction and taste can start. So these words, kanista, madhyama, and uttama, are interesting words. Kanista literally means not steady. Madhyama literally means middle. It can mean your waist. The word madhyama can mean your waist. It just means middle. And Uttama means, what does Uttama mean again? You all know that now.
Love ignorance.
Love ignorance. Or just highest. So our English equivalent would just be beginning, intermediate, and advanced. Or beginning, middle, you know, beginning, middle, and high. So these terms are used in different ways, in different places. You all studied Nectar of Instruction already?
Yes.
Okay, in text 5, I think it is.
Yes.
Rupa Goswami gives a kanista, Majjhima and Uttama.
Yes.
And there, what does he say? A kanista is someone who?
Is
Yes, yes, who said that? Who said, say? Yes?
He's initiated the.
Chanting. Someone who chants the holy name. And there he says the Majjhima is someone who?
Accepts Krishna as the object of
God. No, the verse. Nectar of Instruction. Did you just study this? Yes? No?
Yeah. We didn't memorize once.
That's text 4.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Maybe it's 6. Text 6, sorry.
What's text 5?
You tell me text 5. Text 5 is one should mentally honor the devotee.
Yeah.
Yes, that's text 5. One should mentally honor the devotee who
chants
the holy name of the Lord. One should offer obeisances to
the person
who has received
spiritual initiation,
diksha, and is engaged in
worshipping
the
deity.
Diksha means second initiation, Gayatri. And one should associate with and render service to that pure devotee who has who has undeviating devotional service and whose heart is
completely
devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Okay, so Rupa Goswami there in Nectar of Instruction, text 5, is saying the beginner is someone who chants Hare Krishna. The middle person is someone who's received Gayatri Diksha and worships the deity. The topmost person never deviates from devotional service and doesn't have any desire in their heart to criticize anybody. So that's his definition of there in Nectar of Instruction. That's different than one that he's using here. This is different. And they don't match, folks. They don't match. Okay? They don't match. That kanista isn't the same as this kanista, and that Majjhima isn't the same as this Majjhima, and that Uttama isn't the same as this Uttama. Kanista, Majjhima, Uttama just mean beginner, intermediate, advanced. That's all they mean. So you can categorize that differently. If you're going to say, who's a beginning devotee? You can have different definitions of a beginning devotee, and they don't all go together. The beginner, just like a child becoming an adult, you grow up physically, you grow up socially, you grow up intellectually. If I say someone is mature, could you be mature emotionally and immature physically?
Yes.
Why? Possible. Can you be mature physically and immature socially?
Yes.
Yeah, very possible. So if we say someone is mature, you have to say mature how? Mature in every way? So when we say beginning, intermediate, advanced, it's looking at different things. So the Nectar of Instruction, text 5, beginning, intermediate, advanced, is looking at something different. Then there's another Kanista Majjhima Uttama that's in the 11th canto that Srila Prabhupada quotes in the Ishapanishad and other places, I think, mantra 17. Anybody know that Kanista Majjhima Uttama? Oh, come on, you do. You definitely do. Try. Come on. What else have you heard about Kanista Majjhima Uttama?
That the Kanista only cares about the deity.
Yes, exactly. The Kanista only cares about the deity, doesn't know how to treat anybody else. can tell Manjali's not in that category. She's always thinking about how to treat all the devotees and how to take care of them. So that kind of Kanista doesn't know how to treat other living entities. They think God's only in the temple. The lowest level, God's only in my temple. God's only in the Sunni Muslim temple. He's not in the Shiite Muslim temple. You know, and if you have a different brand of religion, I kill you. That's the lowest Kanista Adhikari, according to that level. God's only in my place of worship. I don't know how to treat anybody else. And the Majjhima in that system is?
One who's
in the
house,
wants to
spread Krishna consciousness.
No,
Krishna, he accepts as the highest
object. He has love for Krishna? Love for Krishna?
Friends with the
devotees.
Compassion
for the innocent and
avoids
the atheist. And the Uttam in that system? Always saying you've had to spread Krishna consciousness, sees Krishna everywhere, thinks he's the lowest, and sees everyone's a devotee of Krishna. That's a different system. Okay, that's a different beginner, intermediate, advanced. It's looking at something different. So be careful when you use the word Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttam, and when you hear other people using it. The Kanista in those three ways, they're not all talking about the same person. It's not if someone's a Kanista here. A Kanista here might be someone who has diksha and is worshiping the deities. Okay? So a Kanista here might be a Majjhim according to Nectar of Instruction, text 5. Okay? Is that clear? Clear? Yes? Yes? Not clear. Okay. You can be beginning, middle, or advanced if you're growing from a child to an adult. You can be beginning, middle, and advanced emotionally. And you can be beginning, middle, and advanced physically. You can be beginning, middle, and advanced socially, intellectually, sexually. And they're not all the same. If I say you're at an immature level socially, you might be at an advanced level intellectually, right? And you might be at an intermediate level physically. Is that clear? So if I say I have beginning, middle, and advanced here for intellectual, and I have beginning, middle, and advanced here for physical. Beginning, middle, and advanced here for emotional. There's all different ways of looking at a person. And you can be beginning, middle, or advanced in each of those ways. And persons may not be beginning in all ways, or middle in all ways, or advanced in all ways. You're looking at different things. So just the word beginner. Beginner how? So this is a certain kind of beginner. And this beginner doesn't necessarily have the same qualities as the other two definitions of a beginner.
So what are those categories?
Well, the one from the 11th canto is mostly looking at relationships. How is your relationship with Krishna and other living entities? The one from the Nectar of Instruction is mostly looking at your external engagements. And this one is mostly looking at your faith and knowledge. This is not looking at your relationship, and it's not looking at your external engagements. It's looking at your faith and knowledge. And the logic of this system is that Vaidhi Bhakti means what's driving you is you believe in the scriptures. It's like, why are you taking your medicine? Because you trust the doctor. You trust the medical study. Why are you following sadhana bhakti? Because you trust the shastra. You trust the guru. You trust the sadhus. So you have to have faith in them. How much faith do you have in them? If you only have a little bit of faith in the doctor, you may not follow very well. You may not be very compliant. I'm talking about being determined. Doctors talk about patience, compliance. How much does the person follow the doctor's instructions? You know, take this medicine every 8 hours, and the person forgets, and they leave it at home. You know, but if they have stronger faith, they have high faith, they're more likely to follow. So I have to believe the doctor, and I have to know what the doctor's instructions are. A friend of mine in Vrindavan, as you can do here in India, bought some antibiotics at a chemist without a doctor and didn't know when to take them. So in order to take the medicine properly, I have to first of all know how to take it. I have to know the instructions. Do I take it with food or without food? Do I take it twice a day or once a day or three times a day? You all following me? And I have to have faith in those instructions. If I say, oh, I know better than that. This instruction says twice a day, but for me, I should take it three times a day. So to be qualified to follow the doctor, I have to have faith in the doctor and the doctor's instructions, and I have to know the doctor's instructions. So to be qualified for Vaidhi Bhakti, which is coming from Guru, Sadhu Shastra and Guru, that's where it's coming from. It's not coming from my inner, like, there's Krishna. It's coming from, this is what it says I'm supposed to do. So I have to know the Shastra. If I don't know the Shastra, I'm going to have a hard time following Vaidhi Bhakti. Make sense? How do I follow the Shastra if I don't know the Shastra? If I don't know the Shastra, then when someone comes to you and says, if you don't have children, you can't go back to Godhead, you'll say, because you don't know. If you don't know the Shastra, if someone says, when you chant Hare Krishna, don't you dare think about Krishna, you'll go, because you won't know. Therefore, we have these classes. To actually get the most advantage of Vaidhi Bhakti, I have to have vidya. Vaidhi is knowledge. To follow Bhakti based on knowledge, I've got to have knowledge. So the higher your knowledge of Shastra, the more qualified. Then you'll actually be following pure Bhakti. You can't get distracted and follow karma-covered Bhakti, or jnana-covered Bhakti, or materially motivated Bhakti, or maybe something that's not even Bhakti at all. Maybe you'll be following karma yoga or jnana yoga, or who knows what you'll be following, you're thinking it's Bhakti, because you don't know. And someone else who doesn't know, or whatever their reason is, may be able to sway you. So the beginner can be, and the intermediate, well, the beginner can be easily swayed. The beginner can't convince others and can be easily convinced because both their faith and their knowledge is very low. So if someone comes and says, just thinking about Krishna, you really think you're going to get perfect just by thinking of Krishna, just by being attached to Krishna? Is that easy? That's it? I mean, really? Come on now. I mean, you got to do more than that. And you'll say, yeah, you're not qualified to think about Krishna. Who do you think you are? Some advanced devotee or something? Thinking about Krishna, that's for the advanced devotee. And you don't know that Prabhupada said, what was it here? He said that was the what?
Beginning.
Beginning of what? Sadhana Bhakti. He didn't say that it was the beginning of Prema Bhakti. But if you don't know, or if you don't have faith, and you think, yeah, it says that, but that's just meant to encourage us. It's not really true. Have you ever heard anybody say that?
Yes.
Okay, so if you don't have faith, if you just don't know, or you know but you don't have faith, and if you don't have faith and you don't know, then it's going to be harder for you to stay on the right path. That's pretty obvious, right? If you have firm faith, but your knowledge is a little shaky, especially you can't convince others. Maybe other people can't sway you, but you can't convince them. Then you're kind of in the middle. And if your faith and your knowledge is really, really firm, then you're on the highest level for being successful in Vaidhi Bhakti. So logically, if you want to be successful in Vaidhi Bhakti, increase your knowledge and increase your faith in Sadhu Shastra Guru. And of course, the Shastra is full of the stories of Sadhus and the story of Guru. And Guru must speak according to Shastra, and Sadhu must speak according to Shastra. It's a very intertwined system. So really know the Shastra and do what you need to do to get faith in that Shastra. And if you do that, then you'll be able to be fixed and determined in Vaidhi Bhakti. So these are the level of eligibility for performing Vaidhi Bhakti. Again, anyone can start with faith and attraction. You don't need any knowledge of Shastra to start. You don't say to start Vaidhi Bhakti, you need to know the Shastra. All you need to do is be attracted. But how successful you're going to be, how fast, how easily, is dependent on your level of Shastric knowledge. Now that's not jnana-covered bhakti. That's not saying I need to have some other kinds of purification. That's knowledge of the process of pure bhakti. Okay? Is this clear? Everybody clear on this? No? Yes?
The last point, like the difference between...
Jnana-covered bhakti and the jnana-covered knowledge of the scriptures? Gyan covered bhakti is, I cannot think about Krishna unless I first become purified. That's Gyan covered bhakti. First I have to become Brahman realized. First I have to become free of all material contamination. First I have to become free of any material desires. Then I can think about Krishna, and then I can become attracted to Krishna. That's Gyan covered bhakti. Knowing the process of pure bhakti in order to practice it is not Gyan covered bhakti. How can you practice the process of pure bhakti unless you know what it is? Now, if you're naturally, spontaneously, fully in love with Krishna from day one, if you're at Raghunuga Bhakti from day one, which basically is a very rare, then you don't need to know anything in the Shastra, you're already there. But for starting Vaidhi Bhakti, which is 99.99999999999999%, even if you're already Brahman realized, by the way, you have to start with Vaidhi Bhakti. So starting Vaidhi Bhakti, you have to know what the process of pure bhakti is. If you don't know what the process of pure bhakti is, you're going to get off the path. Basically, you have to have a map, and you have to have faith in the map. You have to know your map, and you have to have faith in the map. You have to know the doctor's directions, you have to know what they are, and you have to believe them. The more you know the doctor's directions, and the more faith you have in the doctor, the more success, the faster and the quicker and the easier you will have success in the process. Is that a logical thing? And again, that's not related to the other Kanista Majjhimanyutam. It's not a relationship. I can know the scriptures very well and have high faith in the scriptures and still be at a Kanista level in the other systems. So I can know the Shastra, have high faith in the Shastra, and not yet have Diksha. Make sense? Which would put me at the Kanista in the nectar of instruction. I can have high knowledge of the scripture and high faith in the scripture and yet not know how to treat other devotees. So I can be a Kanista in the other system. Just because I know the Shastra backwards and forwards, upside down, inside out, and have firm faith in the Shastra doesn't mean I'm free from the propensity to criticize others. What it means is that I'm a really good candidate for Vaidhi Bhakti. I'm not likely to get mixed up and think something is bhakti that's not. I'm not likely to get mixed up between what's bhakti and what's not bhakti. I'm not likely to get on the wrong road. I'm likely to stay on the right road and know what is the road and what's not the road. All right? Clear? Everybody clear? Okay, we've gone a little late. Let's just do 10 minutes. So we're going to do till 12:33 on that clock. And the rest of the day we're going to spend with answering questions and doing some exercises and some fun things.